This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Art music is a vast, complex and dynamic genre filled with beauty, joy, strangeness and wonderment. And you'll find all of it here, in the joy of classical music. Kia ora koutou, I'm Andrew Johnstone and welcome to episode 168 of The Joy of Classical Music. And this week I'm talking with English composer Andrew March and playing five of his works: How Long, O Lord, Marine, Amoration, Elegy on a Sudden Loss, and Eagle Wood. That's an overlong episode, so if you're listening into the broadcast version, it'll be fading out at about 58 minutes. If you want to hear the full episode, it's available to stream on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or here at Free FM. Next week, I'll be waiting for you at the intersection of classical and jazz with a selection of jazz-influenced classical works and a classically-influenced jazz work called Black, Brown and Beige by the great Duke Ellington. Until then, here's Andrew March's How Long, O Lord.
Oh. It's a setting of Psalm 13 in English. The text is like a montage. I put the text together from various versions of the Bible to produce the best, you know, the optimum setting to apply music to. So, yes, I think the text came first in this case.
When did you write it, Andrew?
It was written in 2008, but it wasn't published until 2014. It was actually written especially for a local church choir on the outer edge of London, St. Mary's Bedfont. And at that point, I was working with the choir on a selection of pieces. I wasn't singing in the choir, although I did sing with them, but I wasn't like a permanent member. And they basically did the premiere. And it's one of the best ways to know if a piece actually works and if it's really what you want to actually, you know, hear it sung, to be part of it. The setting of the words with the music, the way that they fit together with that piece, it's so right for me, and it delivers the highs and lows in the right places for the choir to express themselves. Harmonically, it's a very straightforward piece. There's no great exploratory thing going on harmonically, or melodically, really. But it's something that's meant to be effective, and I've had good feedback from the choir who recorded it. It was recorded in America, actually quite recently. I think it was maybe a year or two ago, and they said it was one of their favourite pieces in the selection of music they were doing for a whole season.
When you say that the piece was right for you, what do you mean by that?
Well, I actually struggle with choral music. I don't find it easy. I don't feel like I'm like a real expert at choral music at all. I really don't. I find it very difficult. I find it difficult to be fresh with what I'm trying to say or how I'm trying to say it. If I try to like really develop the language at all, I go too far and it becomes too difficult, or even the ideas outstrip feasibility and it becomes unsingable. So I find it very difficult to grapple with the language and also the text. The text got to be so right, you know, for it to work. I've tried several times at writing my own lyrics or poetry or whatever the text, and it just does not come naturally to me. And to a certain extent, I think I'm saying the same thing about choral music. I prefer the orchestra.
Andrew, we're going to be playing a selection of your music, but the first piece of music we're going to listen to is Marine, a very special piece of work for you, because that piece of work won the Master Prize International Composition Competition. And it didn't just win the prize, you won the inaugural Master Prize Competition in 1998. There were 1,300 entrants, or more than 1,300 entrants, and you won. How did that feel?
At the time, it was overwhelming. It was incredible, but it was also really frightening at times. There was a huge amount of publicity. It was totally and utterly international. The radio broadcasts were global. Even China and Russia were playing the pieces. In fact, there was a Chinese entrant who got into the final six. The semi-finals had, I think, 15 works, and I was happy just to get into that stage of it. I didn't think I would, because I didn't know. I knew it was an international, like, mature competition. I'd only been out of music college just over a year. I graduated in 1996, so I started to write Marine in 1997. And I have to confess, that piece was actually written for the competition, because it's a strange genesis to the work, because at some point I went on holiday, short break, to Guernsey. And whilst there, I was looking for things to do. And I'd read about this scenic bay called Moulin Wet Bay, but the Wet is spelled H-U-E-T, and it's like a source of confusion. So I take this long walk up a pathway which had foliage and trees overarching, and to be honest, it was odd work to get to the point where suddenly this vista burst into view in front of me, this panoramic Horseshoe Bay, which just gave me goosebumps straight away. The energy of the open sea with this framing of the Horseshoe Bay, which just totally blew me away. And I didn't know at that point I was going to write a piece of music later about it, but that was the immediate effect on me. But I subsequently found out that there was a museum on the island. It's connected to August Renoir. He visited Guernsey himself the summer of 1883 and did some paintings while he was there. So as I started to work on my piece, I was looking for a title. But quite early on, I was wondering what I should call it. And so, I mean, I'm assuming sometime after I came back from my holiday, a concert pianist friend gave me a leaflet on the Master Prize competition. And he wasn't giving it me to like sort of think, you know, to be helpful. He was almost testing me to see how good you are. And it was like pulling my leg, you know. And I started thinking about this competition. I thought, I want to do this. And then it all sort of came together. And the Renoir paintings from that year came together. And there were two paintings in particular, one that captured the foliage and trees aspect, which was like the view through the trees. And the other part was the marine seascape. So one was called Marine à Guernsey, and the other was Baie de Moulin Huée à travers les arbres, which I did a hybrid of the two titles, the marine part and the à travers les arbres. So it's like a marine seascape as viewed through the trees is kind of how I think of it. And that's how that piece came about. And the important thing for me about the Renoir paintings is that the one that's Marine à Guernsey, it's actually a very atypical, it's an atypical Renoir work. It has no human figures. It has these raw, wild brush strokes that look like almost like another artist. It is a really incredible painting that captures the tension and turbulence of the sea. The other part of his painting captured the overarching trees, this auditory aspect of that, which I explore later in that piece, where it becomes more animated. But I think the struggle of getting to the pathway, for me, that's all part of the initial build-up in the piece. It's like the first minute and a half. And depending on which version you're listening to, either 1 minute 34 in one version, or if it's a slow version at 2 minutes, that's the point where I see the scenic bay, and it's marked in the music by what I termed the discovery theme.
Well, let's have a listen. Andrew, would you do me the honour of introducing the piece of music, please?
It's Marine à travers les arbres, which I interpret as a seascape viewed through the trees. Thank you.
The competition's explicit objective was to find new and original works for symphony orchestra with artistic integrity and the potential for broad and lasting appeal. The competition aimed to bridge the gap between complex contemporary classical music and the general listening public. A lot of critics loved your work. Some critics didn't. And one of the things they dismissed it for was saying it was too much like film music. How did you cope with the negativity and the negative criticism?
Well, I just waded straight into this controversy. I had no idea what was coming. I don't think I'd ever really thought about music critics. I had no idea how almost cruel they could be. You know, I was thinking, well, they're not there to encourage. You know, I was 24 years old and I'd written that piece and I was just being treated like I'd sort of dumbed down somehow, like I'd sought out the lowest common denominator. It did not feel like that. And if you actually look at the score, you can see all the hallmarks of my contemporary training. But I admit that the language that it's cast in, I mean, I think I was looking to the Impressionist and Symbolist composers, and but they said, some of the critics said it was like Neo-Baxian, and I hadn't even heard any Bax. I didn't know Bax. And also Delius was another name that they dropped in. Mm. So I think really when you're a new composer coming onto the scene, people need anchors and frames of reference to describe the music. They have to have something to write about. But I wasn't setting out to be a competition winner. I mean, I did purposely enter the competition, but I don't think I really expected to get into the finals or to win the inaugural competition. So a lot of the time I was like a rabbit in headlights. Seriously, it was a very challenging time. But you know, I wouldn't have it any other way. I wouldn't, if I could go back in time, I wouldn't change anything. I'd still enter. It's all part of what's forged me as a composer, even the extremely rough time with the critics. They weren't all bad either.
No, and we must make that point. Actually, most of the reviews were positive, but the competition itself turned out to be extremely controversial, simply because of the fact that it wanted to find pieces of music that would appeal to a wide audience and really didn't go down well with the classical music establishment, did it?
No, I think that it set itself up to almost say that if this is even necessary, then there's an issue with the communication and appeal of the actual avant-garde heritage and the legacy of contemporary music. And that... But I actually think there is an issue. I've witnessed it firsthand. So if you look at the playlists of every major classical station in the world, if you just look at what they're playing, what's on the repeat play, what people are listening to at drive time, even in the nocturnal hours, you look at the pieces that are being played. I find this inspiring, and it's something that I love the outlet of radio. I prefer it to live concert. I don't enjoy physical concerts. I get too nervous. If it's my own piece being played, I can't enjoy it one bit. If it's someone else's music, I love it, but it's like a split experience. It's like this dichotomy where, you know, like if I'm listening to Ravel, I just know that I'm in the company of the greatest orchestrator ever and a wonderful composer, and I just feel so dwarfed. I wouldn't even go to a concert like that if I was in the middle of something, because it would put me off. It would discourage me right in the middle of a piece. So, but I love listening to music myself. But I think the international radio world is really a really big thing. And in looking over those playlists, I don't see a lot of the big names that you would expect to see in the contemporary music world. I mean, obviously, you know, you're going to get some Stravinsky, whatever, but a living composer is up against the great vat of history's music that's been not only recorded, but it's come down through the ages, multiple different versions and different conductors, you know, and so many composers. So, you know, it's almost like, is there room for any more? Is there room for anyone else? But there is room. There's always been room. And it's just a question that I personally don't feel I have the greatest exposure in my home country. I feel not eclipsed, but sort of just not either put out to pasture or not unearthed. I don't know which it is, a bit of both maybe. Where, like, in terms of international radio, it's my main outlet. It's extremely important to me. It's the fact that my music is getting to people. And sometimes people message my website and they tell me that they've been touched by a piece of music I wrote. And it just means the world to me. It really does.
Well, Andrew, we better move on to the next piece of music, which is a 2016 work called Amoration. But before we get there, are you able to make a living as a composer?
Almost. I have health issues. I was born with severe haemophilia. It's a bleeding disorder. So I've not been able to work in the conventional sense. So I've also had some extra issues on top of the haemophilia to contend with. So I was infected with viruses at the age of 9, HIV and later Hep C. Yeah, so this has not been easy. So I've not been able to have the career perhaps that I wanted.
Let's have a listen to Amoration. Thank you. And we're back. Andrew, tell us about that composition. First of all, when I'm talking to composers about their music, and I often want to know what the composition is about, often people will give me technical explanations, but I'm not a technical person, so I don't really understand it. So when I ask a composer, what's it about? I actually want to know the story. What's the narrative? What's the mind movie you're watching while you're listening to that piece of music?
Well, it came about from a simple piano piece. It didn't have strings to start with. I was notating the piano part in a London cafe, and there was a man and a woman on the table nearby who kept looking over, and I thought they realized I'm writing music by hand. So I drew attention, didn't mean to. So they asked me what I was doing, and then they asked if they could hear the piece. And they heard it, and they loved it, but they said it needs strings. And I just thought, well, okay, I wasn't expecting that. And once it had been said, that was it. I couldn't get it out of my mind. And I thought, does it need strings? And then I think, can I hear strings? I'm going to struggle to hear them, but I'm going to try and hear them. And that's, it just went from there. It was recorded in 2016 in Macedonia. And I actually went over there with my sister. And it was an incredible experience because we were in the studio, but the musicians were so passionate and so engaged. And they loved it. They loved doing that piece. So yeah, the piece is definitely some kind of journey. It is slightly cinematic, although I don't intend it to be cinematic. I've been told that it is. It has a kind of like ABA form, where the middle part is a journey through different keys, and it sounds like you're discovering new territory all the time. And then suddenly you land somewhere and you wonder where you've landed. And it's clearly the music of the opening, but you're actually landing back in the very same key that it starts in. You know, it's like an illusion. You end up back where you started.
When did you realize that you had a gift for composition?
Around the age of 7. I've been told that I was playing my granddad's piano, like reaching up to the keys at the age of 4. And I think that's probably why my parents started piano lessons. I think my musical ability was ahead of my command of English. I was behind at school terribly. I was just guessing all the answers in the tests. Things hadn't come together, but I could read music and I could play the piano. And at the same time, I accompanied the school assembly whilst failing all my exams. Not my music exams, though. So somewhere very early on, I was taking over my parents' kitchen table. And they'd be trying to lay it out ready for the family meal. And I would have large paper, like trying to be some kind of orchestral composer. And I was like 10 or something. I was very young. So I think it's just been in there. But, you know, my mother told me something really bizarre. She said that when she was carrying me, she was listening to all sorts of classical music. She loved classical music. And she wanted a composer baby. I don't know how that works. Yeah, I know.
Wonderful story. So, what's the first piece of music that you listen to and... You know, we all have this experience, you know, that first piece of music we listen to that really, really gives us a gut punch. And we suddenly realize that, wow, this is the music for me.
That's tough because I can't actually remember the very first work. So I think I might need to give two examples because one needs to be piano. So like Chopin. So something like... The G flat black key study, which I actually learnt while I was at school. So I was really, really taken with that. It was such a capricious, optimistic piece. It just made me happy. And it was so beautiful, so lively. It's a difficult piece, but it's in a hurry, you know, but it's very, very optimistic. Orchestrally, I think it has to be Bach, the Air Suite in D, which is actually called Air on a G String. It's the air from the suite in D. So it's Air on a G string. But the orchestral version, because it's the thing that strings do so well, is the interweaving of the voices. He's a master at it. There's just nothing like it. The bite and the grating of the different intervals. It's the way they speak and the way they... There's just such a beauty there. Yeah.
Well, let's move on to our next piece of music, a work from 2022, and it's called Elegy on a Sudden Loss, and let's have a listen.
Thank you.
Tell us about Elegy on a Sudden Loss. How long did it take you to write it?
That might have only been a few months to write that piece. I'm a slow composer, I think. So an orchestral work can take 1 year, 5 years. In a way, I need to almost jump to my most recent piece, Eagle Wood. It took me 6 months to write. Elegy on Sudden Loss, I didn't know it was going to be called that to start with, but I knew I was writing some kind of elegiac piece to do with, you know, losing loved ones either without warning or finding out suddenly, or not being told and then suddenly finding out, or it just feeling unexpected even when you know that someone's terminally ill. There was a lot going on with the background of that piece, but I think a lot of it was the COVID pandemic. I couldn't write actually during the pandemic. I had to shield, so, you know, it felt like house arrest, and a caged bird doesn't sing, and I just could not write. But as it came towards the end of the shielding time, I was starting to write, and that piece is one of the it was recorded in 2022, so it was written the November of the year before 2021. So it's definitely, it's in the wake of the pandemic, for sure.
So I guess when the pandemic was in full reign, I guess with being HIV positive and having the hemophilia, you have to be especially careful with getting infections.
Yes. Yeah, so, well, at first they never said anything, but I knew eventually they were going to piece all the different things together. So I was thinking, I need to shield now, even before they've told me. So, and sure enough, they eventually got round to me and, you know, the wider haemophiliac group saying, you guys need to shield. So yes, that's why that happened.
So when you're contemplating a piece or you're starting working on a piece, is it inspiration and hard slog, or is it just all hard slog?
Depends on the piece entirely. So for some pieces, there's like a serving platter. I don't know where it comes from. But the best ideas are just handed to you like gifts. And then it won't mean the whole piece is like that. You have to earn your keep. You have to note spin. You have to organically craft those notes into place. There'll always be something missing, or, you know, like a development. The best part, or the crux of the piece, the heart of it, it's as if it's given.
So our final piece of music is one that you've mentioned a couple of times in the interview. It's called Eagle Wood, and it was written very recently. I've got 2026. Is that the time of completion or the time of recording?
Both. So I didn't start it then, though. I started it last year, so 2025, and it did take 6 months, and it shouldn't have taken 6 months. I was improvising at the piano, and fortunately, I recorded them as audio. And so I had like over 2 hours of piano improvisations. And I kept listening to them. I thought, I really need to somehow cherry pick from these, because I think there's something there, something important. So that's what I did. So at that point, I was thinking that it was just a piano piece. Although I did wonder if it was going to be a piano and viola piece, because I'd previously been writing a suite of pieces for piano and viola. So this had a bearing on the piece, because Eagle Wood has some prominent viola solos. It's a feature of the piece. It's at least three moments. And also viola, like tutti violas as a group feature. Yes, that piece took quite a long time to write, because I was retrospectively notating whilst listening with the headphones to the piano music, trying to capture what I'd done. So, like, I didn't cheat with any of the like modern technology that where you can get it to capture it, or I didn't capture the MIDI either. I just literally, all I had was audio, and I still have that. So 6 months of work, and then another month for typing it onto the computer, editing, proofreading, and getting the what we call the orchestral parts, the players extracted material that each part of the string orchestra would see. So that all has to be prepared. So there's another month for that. And then I was thinking, this just has to be recorded. So it was back to Macedonia. Although I didn't travel this time, I did it remotely, but it was it's the same orchestra that did Amoration, the same pianist as well.
So tell us about the pianist, because I was watching the video of the recording, and gosh, she was very impressive.
It's Maria. She, to be honest, I think I had her in mind as I was writing Eaglewood, based on having been there in 2016. She's actually a very, very, very capable pianist. I saw her online playing Macedonian composer called Zografsky, a sonata for two pianos. So there's another pianist, two separate pianos. And it's a very contemporary, challenging work. So I knew what she was capable of. But Eaglewood is more challenging than it might seem. It, rhythmically, the timing, it's very intricate. So I knew she'd be able to do it. So in many respects, she was absolutely the right pianist for that piece. There's also very strong, definite playing. I think it needs that. It's one of those pieces where, you know, the first 7 or 8 minutes there is a grittiness to it. There's a, I think it's because of what the piece is about, which is my my late singing teacher Yvonne Ivy, and she was a major source of encouragement when I was growing up. She would ask me to just play anything on the piano, like improvising and record these improvisations, and she would use them to paint to. She painted with oils, so she would listen to my music whilst she painted in her studio, which was like an enormous privilege. She had a rough time battling cancer and various periods of remission, and I just think this piece is it's intended as a memorial to her. When she died, I didn't know for quite a while. My whole family, I think 3 weeks went by before we knew. And also, there didn't appear to be like a proper sort of funeral or memorial service, although we subsequently found out there was one. But it just left us all with this awful, gaping sort of hole. I just had to do this piece of music to vent that and to try and address it. I've been told that, well, I feel better since doing the piece, but also everyone in my family, it's like a common agreement amongst us that it's like serving to put things right and to give her a proper goodbye.
Tell us about the title.
That is to do with an idyllic day out, which Yvonne took me out for the day to Arley Wood, which is on the outskirts of a town called Nuneaton in Warwickshire, in the UK. And that wood was just so beautiful. It was one of those places you could just walk straight in. It was carpeted with spring bluebells, free-running pheasants. Everything was perfect. So when I was looking for a potential title for this piece, I thought about that, but it was on my mind. But also, Old Arley was nearby, and she lived in a house. She was like a housekeeper, this enormous house. So when I looked at the etymology of that word, it went back to the medieval times. And it's like a hybrid of like urn for eagle and Lee, I think, for I can't remember off the top of my head, but I think it's to do with a clearing or a wood. So eagle got put with wood, like a hybrid, and that's how that came about, Eagle Wood.
And Andrew, we're rapidly almost out of time now, but just one last question. Do you enjoy your life as a composer?
Yes, I love it. But it is hard work. What I'm writing now is a viola and piano piece. And every day I've been sketching by hand on these A3 landscape sketches at the piano in this incredible heat, because there's a heat wave in the UK at the moment. So it's making everything very difficult. But yes, I love it. And I just love that physical contact with the pen and the paper, and then sorting it all out, trying to get it onto the computer to typeset. I do love what I do.
Andrew, it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much for your time.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.